Well, this hour we're talking about end-of-life care, dying with dignity, with Elaine McIntosh and Dr. Anne Allegre, both who are either about to retire or just have retired from Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care. Lots of phone calls here. Let's go to some of them now. Nita from Overland Park. Nita, you're on Up to Date.
Yes, I have two comments, brief comments. My sister died this summer in Colorado, and she was in hospice, and it was such a positive experience for her and for the family. She had a large family, a lot of children, and it really helped the family get through the experience. Another comment I have is that my daughter is a hospice social worker, and she's actually palliative care. And of course, she never talks about me anything personal about the patients, but in general, she mentions how they do different things specifically for that individual, like for a veteran. They recognize that the gentleman he or she is a veteran. They try to become part of that person's past to incorporate that in their caregiving and also work with the families in getting input from them on who this person really is. So it just isn't a medical care. It's also a social and a psychological care that these wonderful people provide.
Nita, that's a great phone call. Thanks very much. And I was going to ask Ann, does that sound familiar with what you guys do at Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care?
Absolutely. And palliative, her daughter works on a palliative care team. Even in the hospital, palliative care teams provide focus on the patients. For instance, if a patient's in the ICU, obviously we have important questions about how aggressive should care be and should we stop any interventions. But just as important to the patient might be, can my cat come visit me?
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to try to figure out what's important to this person and this family as people, not as medical items.
You know, Nita was just describing this very positive experience, and I'm wondering, Elaine, people who do it right, people who have what you think is a death with dignity and grace, what do they do? What are the keys to that kind of death?
I think that there is a certain level of awareness of the reality of the situation, and I think that probably the most beautiful situations that we see are people where there is a level of understanding that this person that we love is dying. Mm-hmm. The person who's dying knows it, and the family and loved ones know it, and there is a gentle kind of falling into a peaceful state. Mm-hmm. But I do think it involves having the right services and anticipating whatever may happen next, making certain that people are confident and they know that there is a lifeline which is either present or readily available in case there is something that is problematic. But I think it's a lot about awareness and a willingness to sort of face this reality and then tailor the environment accordingly with people, with music, with pets, with whatever it is that is important to the person's quality of life and humanity.
And can you think of someone that you worked with over the years who died a death with dignity who still sticks in your mind for whatever reason?
There are quite a few.
Really?
As Elaine said, it's really about how do we, you know, we all know we're going to die. But how do we accept that this is the time when our focus should shift? And as Elaine said, that takes some real skill and guidance as we facilitate conversations between patients and families. But I think of one patient who I met when she was already through that process of coming to accept what was happening. She was young, around 40. She had two young children, I think 8 and 11.
Wow.
And, of course, most in this situation would be fighting to hang on to life. But she was just so much at peace. And we all loved going in to see her at the hospice house because she was smiling. And I said, well, this must be hard with your children and thinking about leaving them. She said, no, this has been the greatest experience for all of us because without this, we would have just been busy with soccer games and kids' stuff, and we wouldn't have had these great conversations. We wouldn't have gotten to know each other and be so close. And that was 4 days before she died.
That's a great story. That just takes me back. Boy, that's a great story. Let's go back to some calls. And Patricia from the Crossroads District. Patricia, good morning.
Good morning. I just really wanted to echo a lot what your guests are saying. When my mom went into hospice care, it was very quick, but that was mainly because of the severity of her illness. But they let us bring in her pets. It was such a more relaxing and supportive environment than a hospital. There's not all the beeping and the overhead announcements and all that, all those things. So my sister's children were much more comfortable and getting to say goodbye to their grandmother. And the staff was just absolutely amazing in taking care of us.
Yeah.
And I could not, I mean, it's an awful thing to have to lose somebody, but they made it just the absolute best experience it could possibly be.
Great call, Patricia. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Let me go to Dan from Lawrence. Dan, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's good
sure.
to be here. Okay. My dad died in hospice two Thursdays ago.
Hmm. Had his, oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It was a long time, and a lot of the conversation has made me want to mention how it worked for him because he had years of dementia, and his brain was shutting down. And so even though they were doing swallow studies that indicated he could still swallow, he was aspirating. And so he was taking food into his lungs. And so the choices really are watching your parent choke to death eventually or remove food and keep him comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like a crazy thing to say removing the food, but it was the absolute best option. And I was so much more at peace knowing that he was comfortable and that he wasn't going to die by suffocating on his own food.
Yeah.
And so that was what I'm so very thankful for the hospice methods that they use to come to that outcome.
I was going to say, it sounds to me, Dan, like the hospice folks sort of helped you work through all this to get you to a place where you could accept the decision that was made.
Well, my dad was an MD. My mom is an RN. My wife is an MD. I worked at KU Med in oncology for 12 years.
All right.
I know many of the people who do that stuff over there, and that was what was leading me to my question. There are some physicians who, because of their conservative faiths, really are still very anti-hospice, and I wanted to hear from your experts whether or not that is dying out among the medical profession or if it's still just saying that small percentage of people who just can't get on board with it.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. What about this opposition from some aspects of the medical community? Is that lessening or not?
You know, I think all physicians don't want their patients to suffer and want them to have the best care. And unfortunately, much of our medical training is about prolonging life and, you know, doing aggressive medical things and not so much about end of life. But I think as physicians who did not receive this in training have become experienced with hospice and palliative care, they more and more see it as a support for their patients and for what they are trying to do with those
yeah.
patients. So I see there's only a very few holdouts anymore.
That's
died out.
The other thing you hear sometimes, the concern is that, and you alluded to it earlier, Elaine, this idea that the need to deal with relief for a patient who's suffering and the controversy over the use of drugs, and in some cases a dependency that develops on those drugs. How do you guys navigate that?
We believe that if a patient has pain and they need medication, it's no different from having high cholesterol and needing a statin. I mean, it is pain is the medical problem. Sometimes narcotics are the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is just a normal part of practicing medicine in this context.
But
we
what
do
about
have
the dependency issues?
The dependency issues, well, if you have pain and it relieves your suffering, you are dependent upon it. But that type of dependency is a far cry from addiction. That kind of dependency is a far cry from abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that differentiation is the important thing.
And what is the difference between dependency and addiction?
Dependency to me means that you need it in order to resolve your problem. Addiction means that you have a crisis if you don't have it, that you are, that your anxiety, that you have a disorder, essentially, mm-hmm. which arises as a result of not getting that drug.
Right.
And in addiction, you're taking it more for the psychological effect. You're taking it to get high.
Mm-hmm.
And our patients are generally taking it to get relief of their pain so that they have some quality of life. As Elaine said, the doses are always titrated to the patient's symptoms and to the patient's desire for how much they want to take. But the other question then is, you know, addiction is a very serious concern in this country. But if you're within the last month of life, you know, long-term addiction is not going to happen.
Dennis from Kansas City, Missouri. Dennis, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about end-of-life care. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Yes, I was a volunteer for a short amount of time for hospice. I travel for a living, so it was difficult for me. However, one of the patients they gave me was very interesting to me because this patient was my age. He was dying pretty much because of alcoholism, which I had struggled with myself. And I also had, during the time I was caring for this patient, I had hepatitis C, so that I knew that had I continued on drinking like I had been, that I would have died probably younger than that patient was dying, and I think he was around 50. And then on the other hand, my mother had hospice care, which she was in our home, and so I got to experience it also from the family's viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful experience for us, and a really good experience for my mother. So I cannot imagine a world where there is not hospice care. That is my opinion.
And Dennis,
I know that there's a direct. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm glad you called. I need to scoot down, but I appreciate the phone call very much. Thank you. We had a call from Donna, and she wants to know what kind of volunteer opportunities there are in hospice and palliative care in Kansas City.
Lots of different opportunities. There are volunteers. We have probably 500 volunteers who work with us in a variety of capacities. So a volunteer can work with patients at the bedside, visit them in their own homes. We have lots of volunteers at the hospice house. They serve meals. They arrange flowers. They sit with patients when family are not there. If we have an infant at the inpatient facility, they will rock that baby if no one else is there.
Mm-hmm.
There are also a variety of kind of back office things for people who don't really want to work directly with patients and families, office-based activities, and a ton of volunteer help and fundraising.
Well, you guys have been great. Thanks for the good conversation. And we're out of time, but I want to wish you both great retirements, and thanks for coming in to visit today. I sure appreciate it. That's Elaine McIntosh, the outgoing president and CEO at Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care, and Dr. Ann Allegre, the recently retired director of medical programs at the same institution. Again, thank you both very much.
Thank you.